You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN. I'm your host, Mark White, and with me today is Christos Giannaris. Hi, Christos.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I am doing well. So, full transparency to our listeners, the last couple weeks I have been more busy than I've probably been in years, and so I've been a little on the exhausted side. I'm very lucky that Christos has been here to help prop up the show a little bit, but I promise you guys I'll be back in full force within the next couple of weeks once my busyness winds down. But yeah, so thank you, Christos, again for keeping the train from going off the rails.
Oh, I think you don't give yourself enough credit. You're doing just fine. I feel like with Amy gone for a little bit of a stint, I feel like I'm I'm all good things as Dr. Pawlowski. I'm just here for a short season, keeping the seat warm.
Oh no, I'd rather have you here than Pawlowski.
Well, me too, but. That's a whole nother episode.
Well, Christos, I'm going to give you a segment this week. Christos is going to start. Christos is this week in Trek. So you want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Trek this week?
I have just been so excited about everything in Star Trek news. There's so much happening. First off, a little random news. I was reading on the interwebs this morning, and I saw that First Contact is now in 4K on Paramount Plus. So here I am at 6:30 in the morning, turning on the TV to go verify these things. And sure enough, they just made this little silent upgrade in the background. And the movie does look improved, the graphics and the color and all that. So I was like, well, there's a little Father's Day treat for everybody.
First, this is really confusing because don't they typically, like, release on Blu-ray and, like, a box set and all this stuff? And then, like, later on say, oh, we're going to put it on streaming? Isn't that typically what
they do? Well, they did the motion picture director's cut on streaming first. I think it's all about getting subscribes to Paramount Plus up. So I do believe, of course, there are some box sets still coming. There's that rumored box set in the fall with Star Trek V, Star Trek VI. And the director's cut of the motion picture is going to be another 3 Blu-ray, 4K, ultra-high-def release. But we all know that those TNG movies are probably going to be released at some point, all four in a nice box set of their own. But, you know, Paramount Plus is expanding. They're going live later this week in the UK. And I think they're just trying to make sure they're driving content.
I am so excited for all of our UK friends to be able to experience Paramount Plus, because it is extremely convenient to find all of Trek in one place, you know, instead of having to jump around to like three different apps.
Well, the UK guys and gals, they have a little bit more struggle, although they are getting it. I still believe Picard and Lower Decks may still have some contracts with Amazon Prime that need to live out a little longer. So there's going to be multiple services to get all your new Trek still in the UK, but they're getting there. They're getting Strange New Worlds and Prodigy, which they have not had officially. So big step in the right direction.
There'll be a lot less pirates in the UK.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, I don't blame anybody if they're going to other means to watch their Star Trek when the rest of the world is getting Strange New Worlds. And they're just supposed to stop by and, oh, yeah, well, we'll get to it in 3 months or 4 months. And when it's some of the best Trek we've seen in 20 years.
Well, speaking of pirates and space pirates, so I was on Infinite Diversity this week. So check that out, guys. I was there to cover this week's episode specifically dealing with space piracy aboard the Enterprise, and it was a great discussion, had a lot of fun. And yeah, so Christos, I'm sure you also watched this week's Strange New World, so what was your take?
I finally got to watch it yesterday. I was like 48 hours late, and spoilers were happening on the internet. Just like you, I've had a very busy week. I enjoyed the episode. I, you know, Episodes like that one always give me anxiety. I do not like when our ships get taken over, and I get such high anxiety when I watch these episodes.
Yeah.
And but of course, you know, everything always ends well in the end. It was really good. I loved the development of how they took such a serious situation, and it's actually driving the T'Pring and Spock storyline and Nurse Chapel storyline in the background. So you're having like this high stakes A plot, but the B plot, which is connected to the A plot, it is driving more character stuff. So I thought that was really cool. I did kind of give a little bit of a down to just how flippant and lackadaisical Pike was being about the whole situation and making jokes, and him and Number One are like, oh, we're going to cause a mutiny and we're just so sure it's going to work and we manipulated them. Look, ha ha ha. You know, that part was a little hokey to me. I did like the part at the end though, where they come back and like, just get out of my chair and all that. That was good. And then of course, I don't know why we need to see Cybok. Star Trek V is something I try to block out of my mind at all times. So let's go revisit that. But I did think it is kind of cool because we always say, well, where's Cybok? You know, like, where was he? That was some of the criticism when Star Trek V did come out in 1989, was like, oh, suddenly he's got a brother. And then later when Discovery, oh, suddenly he's got a sister. And how does that all fit into canon? So starting to, I guess, show how that happened and where they got there is pretty, I guess that is pretty cool. I'm just dulled by Cybok. I didn't like the character at all. And so I don't feel the need to see more of him.
Yeah. I mean, I hear your point, but I see what they've done with like Nurse Christine Chapel. I talk a lot about it on Infinite Diversity this week, where, you know, here's a character from the original series that got kind of like, you know, here and there screen time, but was never really fleshed out as far as a character like most of the main cast. And what they're doing with Strange New Worlds is really building on that and making her to be a character that you really root for and care about. And, you know, I think hopefully we get that kind of treatment with Cybok as far as being a character that maybe is more fleshed out, we understand more. By the time we get to the movies, we know more about this guy and it makes it more interesting. Hopefully what they do with him makes that movie be better. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see possible. How much more they actually do with him, or is that just it? But forgive me, the actor that played the villain in this episode, they were very well received in the internet, in the Star Trek world. Very, very twisted villain. And I do believe we'll be seeing more of them.
Hopefully. Yeah, and I mentioned that on Infinite Diversity as well. Is that character, so it was Angel / Dr. Aspen, was so well written and well acted and executed. Their character is up there as being one of the better Trek villains, and it would be a shame if they're not back for another outing or two on Strange New Worlds at some point.
Well, I think that's how maybe you do see Cybok again, is some other attempt to free Cybok.
Yeah.
So my final news today has been, there's just been a lot of rumbling and a lot of drops from Terry Metalis about Picard season 3, as we continue to get a ramp up there. By the way, I was very disappointed that on Picard Day we did not get a trailer. I was convinced we would, but
you had me convinced.
I know. I had a few people convinced, but they let us down. But some news about season 3. LeVar Burton let it slip that his daughter is going to be in season 3. His real life daughter is going to play his Geordi LaForge's daughter in season 3 of Picard. So Geordi finally got married and had a daughter. I think he had two daughters he let on. Geordi had two daughters, and one of the daughters will be his real life daughter in season 3.
Amen. That means Jordy finally got some. Good for him.
Yeah. I think that, you know, and I'm good for LeVar Burton. He's been pretty, you know, as the actors have talked about what they would have, like, changed about their characters, it's nice to see that that's getting written into the show so they do get, you know, some of these reputations that they had fixed. But Terry Metalis has been talking about a lot of cameos beyond... For first off, our TNG crew are not cameos. They are true cast members and in most of the episodes, if not all of them. But he's alluded to some cameos from DS9 and Voyager alumni, so we have that to look forward to. But he's even gone further to say that he wants to continue to work in that timeline, you know, the Picard timeline. I believe it was 2401 during season 2. And it's going to be a year and a half later when season 3 finally airs. So they want to keep going in that timeline. And, of course, we've heard rumors of a Raffi and 7 of 9 spinoff. And at the same time, Kate Mulgrew's been dropping little hints about wanting to return as live-action Janeway. And to a point where it almost makes you feel like something's already happened or at least been inked to happen. So I'm going to make a big prediction here. I believe we're going to see a cameo by Admiral Janeway in season 3 of Picard. And then I believe that she will show up as a recurring admiral in some sort of 7 of 9 Raffi spinoff series.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
I think the fans would go wild.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just throwing this out there. If they bring back somebody from Deep Space Nine, fingers crossed... that is either Quark. I love Quark. Sorry, I just do. So either Quark or... they can't really bring back Jadzia, but... Well, I'll say Jadzia anyway because, you know, whatever. Maybe it's a flashback.
Yeah.
So Quark or Jadzia.
Sure. I would like to see Major Kira, Colonel Kira, whatever you want to call her. I would love to see Nana Visitor back. I think that would be my first pick for a DS9 cameo.
Well, they've mentioned Quark in a couple of the new series already. Just bring him onto screen.
Yeah, more of that coming in our main topic today.
True story. Okay. We've gone pretty far. I'm going to jump into All Good World. So now it's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA to Canada and South America, from the United Kingdom to South Africa, from Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond, this is All Good World.
Each episode we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached. Today's episode we'd like to give a special shout out to Romania. Fun fact, the Danube, Europe's second longest river, rises in Germany's Black Forest and flows in a southeasterly direction for 2,857 kilometers before emptying into Romania's Danube Delta. The Carpathian Mountains, which cross Romania from the north to southwest, include Moldovan Peak at an altitude of 2,544 meters. Romania was formed in 1859 through a personal union of the Danubian principalities of Moldova and Wallachia. Okay, we'll go with Wallachia. The new state, officially named Romania since 1866, gained independence from the Ottoman Empire in 1877. During World War I, after declaring its neutrality in 1914, Romania fought together with the Allied powers in 1916. So a little bit of history there. Sometimes when we don't have Star Trek connections, I throw a little history in there. And you can also hear more historic facts if you like them with History with the Zalagis on this network with Chrissy DeClercq Zalagi and her partner Jason. And you can also hear Chrissy on Infinite Diversity as well.
I thought you were going to plug them. I was like, it's a perfect plug.
Yeah.
That's a good podcast too. I enjoy that. It's like, I think it comes out once or twice a week, and it's usually 10 minutes or less. So it's a really short little nugget, and you feel like you learned something. Sometimes I listen to that one when I'm getting ready in the morning.
Yeah, I love. So I think we mentioned it last week when I was talking about the animated series, and it's like, I like stuff that I can put on just for a little bit of time when it's not like an hour long commitment or something like that, you know? So having these shorter podcasts is great, as you mentioned. Yeah. Well, Christos, would you mind introducing the topic this week and maybe giving a short synopsis?
Sure thing. We're going to be discussing our undercover topic, part two. And the episode is Picard, Stardust City Rag. And the synopsis on Memory Alpha, that is, the La Serena crew begins an unpredictable and lively expedition into Free Cloud to search for Bruce Maddox. When they learn that Maddox has found himself in a precarious situation, a familiar face offers her assistance. And that familiar face, of course, is Seven of Nine, after having just shown up at the very end of the prior episode. So she gets her first real episode back in the timeline post-Voyager and in this episode.
And I want to say the introduction in the previous episode, which I didn't rewatch, but like I remember, is just fantastic. The way they set it up where it's just a shock to the audience. Oh my goodness, it's Seven. And then that was sort of what Picard's reaction was and her reaction to Picard. And then I think the only line she spits out is like, "You owe me a ship, Picard." And then she collapses.
Right.
And it's just like, yes. And then fade to black. It was perfect. I love that.
Yeah. I remember when, I think it was during Comic-Con 2019 that they rolled out a trailer and then rolled out Jeri Ryan to say that she was going to be part of the Picard cast or be, you know, in it. And what a shock that was and how excited we were. But then, as much as I loved that and loved seeing her in the trailer, it did kind of reduce the impact of her being the way she's reintroduced on the show. So it's not like there's, we knew she was coming at some point. In fact, I believe she was even in the opening credits. So it's a pro and con there, spoilery, but not spoilery. But I understand you sometimes need to give that information so that it generates interest and buzz for the show and people actually want to tune in to watch it beyond the hardcore fans who are going to watch it no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so do you want to talk about that cold open?
Let's talk about that cold open. So when I talk to fans about this episode, and I've talked to a lot of fans about this episode because it's one of my favorite from the season, I seem to be kind of alone on that hill. Because most people are so thrown off by the cold open of this episode that they just don't go back to this episode. And it's kind of sad because it is a fun jaunt for the crew of the La Serena and a funny episode, and it builds more character development with like Raffi and her child and all of that. There's so much that happens, and actually you start seeing the inkling of Seven and Raffi's bond in this episode. There's so much good in this episode, but a lot of people tend to write it off because that cold open of, it's very graphic. It is like kind of a Saw type of graphic nature where you see a fan favorite Icheb, who everybody loves from Voyager, you know, laid out on the slab, getting his eyeball ripped out of his face before Seven is able to go and you know,
yeah,
and save him. And then she ends up having to mercy kill him because he's gonna die anyway. And he's suffering so badly. Yeah, so there was a lot there in that cold open. It is a little on the graphic side, but if you can get through that first couple of minutes or even skip through it, if you got small people watching with you, the rest of the episode is so much fun. I don't know. What's your take on it, Christos?
Right. So I am one of those people that I find it very uncomfortable to watch that first 4 or 5 minutes of that episode. I mean, let's just face it. They went directly into the horror genre for that cold open. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of balance that with the fact that the rest of the episode is very light and comedic at times. So it is a teeter-totter, and I am not a fan of the horror genre, for one. So that automatically explains why I don't like the first few minutes. In fact, I rewatched it yesterday in order to prepare for this, and I actually just kind of zipped by it and didn't watch it. I just like, okay, I know what happens there. I don't need to rewatch that.
Yeah,
but it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to watch a fan favorite get butchered, and let's just face it, he gets butchered alive on the table. Mm-hmm. And it's there, of course, to show us the relationship and the motivation of Seven of Nine toward Bajazel, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But yeah. I understand why it's there, and it does serve a purpose. I don't know that we needed to see what we saw or as in-depthly as we saw. I think the idea was to shock us as an audience, and it did. I think they wanted to continue to test some of the boundaries of this new Picard format of Star Trek and how it differs from episodial 90s Trek, and that it is darker, and it's not on network television, so they can go a little bit deeper. And you know,
Christos, can I interject there for a second? Because when this episode came out, I did see there was a meme that was splashed around this time whenever anybody brought up that point of like, this is so much darker than 90s Trek. It was that season one episode of TNG, I think it was season one, where the admirals get taken over by that bug creature, and then they have to go and phaser that one admiral that's got all the bugs living inside of him, and it's like his flesh melts off and it's just a skeleton, and then all these like maggot bug things crawl out of him, burst out of his chest, and it's the most graphically disgusting scene probably in TNG, and that's right in season one. And I would argue that's, you know, you can hold them both up next to each other as being equally disgusting.
Oh, Mark, I disagree. So that's conspiracy. That's one of my favorite episodes of TNG. And and I'm hoping, you know, there's even some conspiracy theories that has a little bit to do with maybe the plot of season three of Picard, because that is a big loose thread that never got finished with TNG. But I feel like the special effect, you know, you're right. It is probably the most graphic episodes of TNG technically, and I know there's a lot of story on how that episode got made, but the special effects are so hokey. It's so, you know, laughable that you kind of are, it's gross, but you're laughing at the same time. What we see in Stardust City Rag is believable horror and blood and you know, things that someone could do to you, and you can only imagine how that would feel. So you get the heebie-jeebies, and I think that's the difference. You're right, it is a, you know, gross, definitely dark type of episode, but it still has that 80s flair to it. Like I said, I think the Picard thing is just a little too real, and we see, like you said, somebody we care about getting hurt.
So it's actually good that we're both coming from two different perspectives on it, because I think that's where the fan base is. It's like you're either in Camp A, I think you're in Camp A with like it being kind of too gross to watch on a rewatch, or with me where it doesn't really distract for me. I'm not into horror at all. I don't watch horror movies. My partner is, and I get forced into watching a lot of horror because of him, but it's not really my thing. I've never really been into horror, but I don't necessarily look away anymore. I think it maybe I've desensitized. That could be it too.
Well, that does happen after a while when you see things.
Yeah.
But still, I don't need to see it. But listeners, it's very easy to forward the first 4 or 5 minutes and get past it. Like Mark said, after that, it's a really fun, wild ride.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts, please, in the comment section on Twitter or in the BQN Collective Facebook page. Thanks.
Or if there's another example of Star Trek going super dark in horror that we're forgetting, you know, drop us a comment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let us know. Okay, that could be a whole new series. You know, I love starting new series. So, like we were talking about, especially with Lower Decks and trying to find a connection between the A-plot and B-plot, I found myself this week trying to find a connection between A plot and B plot. And again, I was at kind of a loss. They're making it difficult for me. So, Christos, you were the wizard last week and you found the connection. So I'm hoping you can find some type of strange connective thread between the two this week.
Well, I don't think it's as in your face as last week's. So my thought is, of course, you have the crew of the La Sirena who is after Bruce Maddox, and they're obviously trying to find him to find out more about the synths and Soji and all of that. On the flip side, you have Seven of Nine, who is on a completely different mission, and it's a revenge mission, and she's out to avenge Ichab's death. And it's that moment that will come up later where Picard and Seven and them are standing there in front of Bajazel, and Picard realizes that Seven knows Bajazel, and that there's a reason Seven's here, and it wasn't just to help out Picard. So there was alternate intentions on Seven's part that just kind of happened to help the progress of what Picard was trying to do. And then I guess the C plot, if there is a C plot, is learning a little bit more about Rafi's backstory with her family, and her son more specifically, and how that ties in. And for more on that C plot, if you read the novel The Last Best Hope, which was the prequel novel to Picard, you find out all the things that happen with Rafi and her family to lead her to having this very strange and estranged relationship with her son. Basically, the crux of that is that Rafi threw herself into her work and was more loyal to Admiral Jean-Luc Picard than she was to her family. That quest to figure out what was happening with the Romulan star supernova, and that it was alluded to that that supernova was actually a man-made event. And Rafi just believed there was so much going on in the background, and she was ignoring her family and throwing herself in Starfleet and her work and getting wrapped up in conspiracy theories, and was a very, very, very absent mother. And then I think when everything went wrong for Rafi, she turned to drugs. You know, after Picard quits and basically Rafi gets sidelined, and she turned to drugs and her family life fell apart. So that's your C plot, listeners, but a lot more on that in Last Best Hope.
See, I was considering that the B plot. I considered the Seven sort of subplot was just sort of tacked in with the A plot of going to Free Cloud with Picard and whatnot. But
yeah,
but I can see where you would see them as three different. Yeah. That makes sense too.
I kind of see the three different things going on there, because you can write up a whole episode if you wanted to, just about Seven trying to get avenge Ichab. That could be its own thing. It just intertwines itself into Picard's intention. So I guess you can look at it both ways, and I guess both be right. I think where they do also, where the C-plot does come in, obviously the rejection by her son leads to Rafi going back on to La Sirena and continuing on with Picard the rest of the season.
Well, the connective thread I found this week between A-plot, B-plot, and C-plot is family and being protective of family and avenging family is what I see, because you have, on the one hand, Picard is on this quest to find or save Data's offspring, and then you have Seven, who considers Ichab as like her offspring. Mm-hmm. Avenging his death, and then you have Rafi, who is seeking out her offspring to reconnect with and try to build a bridge with again. So
that is
I get the wizard hat.
That is a very good very good throughput there.
I only got it because of pretty much everything that you said. I was like, oh, I was listening. I was like, oh, wait, I think I found it. So thank
That's
you.
That's why you talk it out.
That's why you talk it out, exactly. So, with our undercover series, what's fun about this series is we're going to be covering a lot of Trek episodes throughout the whole franchise where the crews have to obviously go undercover in various scenarios and either infiltrate something or just create a ruse or what have you, but they're pretending to be things that they're not, or they're hiding from the enemy in some way, and it makes for fun. There's a lot of really good episodes that fall under that umbrella as of undercover series, and so I want to talk a little bit about how well it was executed. And we have Picard, who was sort of a French pirate. We have Rios, who was an intergalactic pimp slash facer, but he was really kind of a pimp. And then Elnor. Well, Elnor, they just were like, Elnor, just be Elnor. So what are your thoughts here? How did they do with the deceiving? And do you think that they executed the mission well? What are your thoughts?
Well, I like it. you got several characters in there doing different things. So I guess you could kind of run it down almost by character. I loved Rios, his intergalactic pimp. I think he got into it with a lot of good cues from Raffi, kind of telling him how to behave and how to act and whatnot. Picard is almost, I hope we're supposed to laugh at him or laugh with him, because he's just so over the top. He just kind of reminds me of this gay, flamboyant French pirate. You know, I think it does come across as gay camp to me, the way Patrick Stewart played that. And so if that was the intent, I'm laughing here with you, because it is a little over the top. And I think Patrick Stewart was just really having some fun, and I can appreciate that. And of course, Elnor, bless his heart, I think he had just joined the show in the prior episode. So he's still new and obviously super, super naive. And, you know, he hasn't seen a whole lot. So can you imagine leaving the Kuat Mulat and then, like, suddenly you're on Free Cloud? It'd be like being in some little, like, Amish very village sheltered in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you're in Vegas, you know, like, wow, this is crazy. So I think that is played really well. And he's just, oh my God, we're pretending? Are we still pretending? That's just kind of cute. And I think appropriate given how young his character is and how he had just left everything he knew. So I think the deception works really well. A couple of little things that don't work well for me. First off, the costuming in general of Picard. It is for 500 years from now or 400 years from now, whatever it's supposed to be. I still think it resembles 21st century Earth a little too much. I mean, if you look at what Bruce Maddox is wearing and what Rios is wearing, okay, that was all probably off the rack stuff versus supposed to be something that's 400 years futuristic. So unless retro really became a thing and, you know, literally Bruce Maddox is wearing a suit jacket and a button-down shirt. And so is Rios and even Picard. It's all very much a jacket, but it's supposed to be current, appropriate fashion. So that suspends my disbelief a little bit. It makes me forget that I'm watching a show 400 years in the future. And I think that has been some of the criticism of Picard. When you get past that, though, it's great. I believe it. I do wonder why Maddox did not recognize Picard sooner, unless it's just attributed to his weakened, abused, poisoned state. But it suddenly, once Picard drops the accent and everything, he's like, Picard? And it kind of clicks. I'm like, well, that's the same guy that was standing there all along. So unless, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they only met briefly, like 30 years prior, and Picard does look visibly older, and I don't know. I think also it comes from a place of nobody's heard from Picard in such a long time, and he just wouldn't expect it to be him way out there in Free Cloud. Like, it's just all very much, I guess his character would just not expected. And so, yeah, in his state of, like, he had been partially drugged and beat and whatever, he's probably exhausted. He's just not operating on all, you know, firing on all cylinders. Yeah, I can see where he'd be confused.
All right, I'll give you that.
So I also have nitpicks, but I'm going to save it for the next section there. But before we get into that, I want to see if we can talk about some things that we loved about this episode.
So,
and do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I have a moment that I was reminded of watching yesterday that I remember watching it the first time, and I've actually, like, not going to lie, watched this one little scene multiple times, and it's after they beam up off of Free Cloud with everybody, including Maddox, and everyone kind of disperses out, and it's just Picard and Seven of Nine, and they talk a little bit about the trauma of being a ex-Borg and getting back their humanity and how it's a struggle every damn day, as Seven says, and they have that real moment of connection. And at the same time, Jeff Russo brings in the Voyager theme as Seven is leaving the ship. It's interwoven into the music, and you just get these hints of the Voyager theme song as Seven beams out. And I just get chicken skin every time I watch that scene. I love it.
I did the same thing as you. I have to admit, maybe not this rewatch, but I've watched this episode a lot because it's a go-to for me from season one. And there are, you know, Amy's mentioned before that one of the issues she's had with, you know, Picard and Discovery is that she finds them not episodic enough to jump back in and out of. But I think this one it worked for us. And I do know that, you know, when I've initially watched it, that was a scene that I would rewind, watch again, rewind, watch again, just to get the goosebumps on my arm going, because it's just like, oh, it's so good, so yeah. Well written. And then the music from Jeff Russo, yeah, right, it's just all of the things.
Give me more of that. Give me more of that theme song.
Yeah, you get any more of that Voyager theme?
Nerd.
But they did actually bring that Voyager theme back in again when she is reintroduced towards the end of the season. I believe it's either the last episode of season one or the next to last when she is introduced on the crashed Borg artifact. And she is kicking off those dead Romulan bodies off that ledge thing. They play a little bit of it then too, I noticed, so... Yeah.
Well, one thing is certain, I'm going to continue watching on from episode 5 and just finish out the season again.
Yeah, because it only gets better. Like, I mean, I enjoy the full season, and I was glued to my, you know, screens, multiple screens when it was first airing, and I watched each multiple times. But it does get better. Like, the first few do start out slow. And it builds momentum. And by the time you're in episode 5, 6, 7, it's like, oh, these are getting real good. And they do end on quite the note. It was quite the action adventure. And then the sacrifice of Picard, you know, at the end of the season. It's so good.
It's very, yeah, it's just so good. Very bingeable. What are some other things that you love about this episode, Mark?
Oh, man. So I love that this was one of the more lighthearted of the season. Something that I loved about Next Gen is they had such a good balance of, you know, they did take themselves seriously, more serious, I think, than a lot of Trek, especially what had come before, because the original series was, you know, a little goofy in comparison. But they did sprinkle in, like, these Fistful of Data episodes with the jokes and whatnot. And I think that this is another episode where, you know, they're dressed into costumes, almost like a holodeck episode, where they would be playing these characters like a Dixon Hill or something, you know? And it reminded me of that. I got tinges of that. This was directed by Jonathan Franks, this episode. And you can tell that the cast was having a lot of fun. I loved Bajazel as a villain. It's too bad they just ended her in this episode, because I think she made a compelling villain, and had they kept her around, they could have brought her back maybe for season 3 or in some sort of spin-off capacity. But I do hope they bring back the actress in some way, maybe throw her in prosthetics or something, or paint her green. But the actress herself did a really fantastic job. I loved what they did with, you know, you instantly got the familiarity between her and Seven because she referred to her as Annika. And then when she said Annika, I was just like, oh, the hair stood up in my arms, because I'm like, how does she know that? Because Seven would never just tell people her backstory like that. Even in Voyager, like, it was very few people, I feel like, that knew her to that level. And so you instantly got, oh, they're pretty familiar with each other if she's calling her by her, essentially her dead name, you know.
Well, right, but I think, I mean, I took it as they were lovers.
Yeah. Which is sort of what the fan community has been asking for a long time with that character, because it made the most sense with the writing of how she was written, with the acting of how she portrayed the character in the 90s. She seemed like she was part of, you know, this you know, gay community. And they, I don't think in the 90s, like, the producers of the show really had, I guess, the guts to do it, or were afraid that the show would lose popularity or whatnot. So they didn't do that with her. And they thought that it would made more sense for her to be dating somebody like, you know, I'm going to say Chipotle.
Oh, wow.
The writing was on the wall, and just to get inklings of that. And then again, like, the touching moment I mentioned between Seven and Raffi as they're getting ready. And she's like, I just want you to know I appreciate and understand what you're doing. You know, that kind of thing. It was just like, as she was, like, helping her get ready, I just found that tender moment, like, a little drop of, like, what was to come, even if they didn't know it.
That totally hit different with me on my rewatch yesterday. From the first time we saw it, I didn't see that. In the rewatch, knowing what becomes with Raffi and Seven, I totally see that as a tender moment. And it kind of, like, wraps back into the point I was going to make. You said something about the killing of Bejazel being kind of like, you know, you wish it hadn't quite happened so that she could come back and be a villain again. I was just the opposite. I took it as, you know, well, like, so Raffi, obviously, I think she has that thing that sometimes she wants to work. I think she finds Starfleet restrictive at times, right? You know, we want to just go do this, but, you know, obviously we got these rules we have to play in. And Seven is now in this environment where she's playing outside the rules, and, you know, they can kind of go do their thing. I liked that Seven executed Bejazel because I think it was counterpoint to Picard always being, oh, you know, we can always solve this with talk and blah, blah, blah. And we're always can be better and don't give in. I think it was important to see that Seven is not, she's not Picard and she's not 100% Starfleet. And she is going to do things a little bit different. And there's a Picard way of doing it. And then there's the Seven way of doing it. And she went ahead and did it. And I can appreciate that. And I do appreciate that, like, she deceives Picard so he doesn't think that she did that, so that his faith in humanity can be preserved, and she's not going to be he's not going to be as jaded as she is, because she's jaded. Picard still has hope, you know, that we can solve with diplomacy and there's a better way, and, you know. Yeah. Seven's much more, you know, stripped down. She's much more raw. She's much more bare. And she's just a little bit more using Wild Wild West antics to solve her problems and get things done. And she's not quite back to the Seven that we see at the end of season 2. She's on a journey as well.
Yeah. And I think the writers and the producers of this show got Seven. They got Seven immediately when they started putting her in the show. They understood the character, I think, better. Maybe through the years, they've come to understand her better, but it was very on brand for her, because if you watch Voyager, and I loved Voyager when I was a kid, and I've gone back and done rewatches of Voyager, and it's a great show. You see the constant butting of heads with Janeway, where she just, Janeway wants to do, like Picard, the Starfleet way. And then Seven is oftentimes butting up against that. And I think what they end up deciding together in a lot of those episodes ends up being like the best result because of that headbutting, right? And because you get these differing opinions. Is Seven always right for being a vigilante? No. But is the Starfleet way always right either? No, that's debatable too.
Right.
Yeah, let's jump on. Let's continue the discussion. Jump on into nitpicks. I know you've already brought up a couple of points, but I've got a few here myself. So when we first meet Bruce Maddox, I was probably, I don't know, I was, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years old. I don't know. This is the 90s.
Season 2.
I'm not sure.
Season 2 of TNG.
Yeah. So I might even have been younger than that. I'm not sure. But it's the same amount of time for the characters as it's been for us. Mm-hmm. And then Jurati is somebody that probably is in pretty close age to me. I mean, how old is the actress Allison Pill? She's not that old. Is she 40? I mean, yeah. And she's dating Maddox, who at this point would be like, what, 70?
I mean, he could
or
be.
At least
he could,
60.
He could be between 60 and 70, probably, give or take.
I mean, I'd hate to be an ageist, but that's a big difference.
You are being ageist.
I don't know. I'm probably pissing off. Some,
no,
So
listeners, I will take the opposite and say, I guess it doesn't really matter to me, especially in the Star Trek world where people live a lot longer, where we have different, there's medicine and, you know, people.
Love is love.
Yeah, love is love. You see people live to be 120 and 130 in Star Trek in that future. So, I mean, quite possibly they'd have this whole life to live. I think what's a little bit inappropriate is that they have this working relationship that turned into something romantic. And I think that it's probably clouded a lot of Jurati's decision-making process. So,
well, I think it's natural for a lot of people to meet at work. We spend most of our time at work. They're scientists, so they spend pretty much all of their time at work. They're not going out to Quark's bar on the weekends. It's like, no, they're focused on their work. So to me, I found that kind of organic. So I take the opposite approach.
Well, I think I'm probably looking at it a little bit more from that book, that Last Best Hope book. There is a little bit of backstory there as well with the characters. And it was definitely, he was more in a position of authority over her, and so mm-hmm. for that to go romantic, technically that's usually not the way things go. But I don't really have a problem with the age though thing. If you take aside the work stuff, there's really, you know, there's, I think it's common even now in our society today, and like I said, I think it will become even less of a thing in the future.
Well, okay, fine. But the real problem of this episode, the biggest problem, I mean, that I don't know how anybody could possibly disagree with me for having this nitpick, is Maddox, who spends his entire life working on synthetic people, doesn't like synthetic cookies? Excuse me? No. He's got, oh no, I've got to make it with organic eggs and natural flour and blah, 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 and I got to...
Well, no, he replicated all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
he replicated this, but it's still like, oh, if you've replicated all that stuff, then technically it's still a synthetic cookie.
The only thing you can get that's legitimate is the true baking process. I watched that yesterday and I was like, oh, that makes no sense, because unless you had fresh ingredients, you wouldn't be, you would, you know, that's kind of dumb. I I'm a little bit more forgiving of the entire scene because really it's just a plot device to establish a relationship between Maddox and Girardi and show the audience that the nature of their relationship as she's coming back into being reunited with him. That's why we see that, but yeah, it's dumb.
Okay, another thing. They make this big point to pan down at the beginning and show Quark's bar. And we all get excited. Oh, it's Quark's bar. Yes, Dabo tables. Ah. And then you see Rios kind of glances that way and then walks in the opposite direction. And he's like, nah, I'm not going to Quark's today. I'm going to go to this other bar. And I guess it's where Bejazel is at this other bar.
Right.
But, I mean, as the audience, like, we want to see the inside of Quark's. Like, who's in there? Is Morn sitting there? Like, let's see it. Like, what's happening?
So I think that's, well, first off, I think we established that Quark's is now a franchise throughout the galaxy. That's part of what that's there for. And I think that what the point is, I think, for you, there's a difference between an Easter egg, which is what we got, and full-on fan service by taking us in there. And I think if we walked into Quark's and there, you know, like you just said, if you put Morn in there or whatnot, that would all become too distracting from what we need to watch happen. And instead of watching, just like, oh, we're going to have a little trip back to Quark's. And, you know, we're all excited to see that and losing our heads. But let's just hope that, you know, in the future we will see Quark again.
Christos, I got a new nickname for you.
What's that?
Where fun goes to die.
I'm just giving you the logic, you know, I'm a little, I agree with you. It'd be fun. There's a lot of things that I want to see that would be fun to see. In fact, when you were talking earlier, I was like, I really want to see a scene with Admiral Janeway and Dr. Crusher, because I feel like those two characters would really mesh well. And there's just, you know, that's something I really want to see. Now, will we get to see it? Will it make sense to ever see it? Who knows? But that's, I guess, between fan service for Christos or really just being necessary for a plot, which, you know, we got to see Quark's, which is great. But I don't know. You know, like, yeah. I said, I think in time, like I said, it would just be too much of a distraction.
So in Voyager, they set up the plot device that Seven can't drink synthahol because she actually can still get intoxicated off it, I guess, or that she's prone to it. And so I found it interesting that, you know, she goes into Picard's quarters and then she orders straight up bourbon, and she orders it twice, actually, which has to be real bourbon, I'm sure. And if that's the case, then, I mean, did Picard beam up to the La Serena with, like, a full-on bar? Was he, like, a wet bar? He's like, oh, remember to pack my wet bar. You know, what are your thoughts? I just found that weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird. I don't quite remember the 7 of 9 synthahol thing. Like, was she allowed to drink it? Could she not get drunk? Could she get drunk? I don't remember that very well, so listeners, don't beat me. I do find it weird that, of course, not only do we have the Picard's office from the vineyard, but yeah, the alcohol is real? ? Or, you know, I don't know. I think it's a little strange, but, you know, Rios does have a thing with alcohol too, which is also established between the show and some of the novels that are surrounding Picard. So yeah, I can't shed too much of a light on it. So you're on your own on this one, Mark.
So they make it a point to beat you over the head that drugs are bad in this show. And yeah, like, as somebody that went through the DARE program, I just feel, in Nancy Reagan and all of that, like, I grew up in that generation, and I've, as an adult, realized that, yes, there are people that abuse drugs, and drugs are not for everybody. But drugs are for some people. They can be beneficial to help you get through life as long as you don't abuse them. Like medicinal marijuana is a thing. They've done a lot of studies in the last few years with psilocybin mushrooms and treating people with PTSD. I'm never going to be somebody that says drugs are bad, stay away from drugs. It's like, no, stay away from being an idiot and using hard drugs or abusing anything, like whether it's alcohol or drugs or sex or eating too much cake. You can abuse all kinds of different things. You can drink way too much coffee and you know, have problems with your body, you know, if you do anything too far. I don't know. But like, I feel like they really, in Star Trek Picard, tried to hammer the fact that just drugs are bad, kids, don't do drugs. It was just annoying, especially when they went to Free Cloud and there's the thing and like, you want some, what is it, snake venom? Yeah. And off he's like, oh. You know.
I think
maybe I was taking it too personally. I get personally offended.
Triggered. I don't quite take it that way. I think what they're just establishing in the Picard universe, there are still drugs and there are, you know, ways that to abuse.
Take
and
the profits.
It's not just about synthahol, which is, you know, controllable and whatnot. That there are things out there and people are abusing them and have addiction problems and it's still real. And so you do see, yeah, like, I think to make it relatable to the audience, you see like Rafe struggling with addiction and trying to get sober and whatnot. So I think that's the reason it's brought up. I will mention your little DARE program real fast, because I don't know if you remember toward the end of the season one episode of TNG, Symbiosis, you have that little conversation between Tasha Yar and Wesley Crusher about drugs and why do people do drugs? And, you know, and Tasha goes into a kind of a long diatribe about drugs. And that was actually put in there. The Reagan administration was requesting that Hollywood shows incorporate an episode or a story about the drug problem. And that was kind of the way Star Trek The Next Generation wrote that in.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Maybe I block that part of the episode out. I don't know. And then our listeners this week are going to be like, oh my goodness. Host Mark lives in a drug den. And whatever. Think what you want, guys. I don't even smoke that much. Barely ever. I don't think I have in weeks. But with that said, I feel like it gets demonized a lot. And I just feel like there's a whole other side of that coin where it does help some people get through some really tough stuff. Especially, like I said, the soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, should have access to the stuff that, you know, is not, you know, made by Pfizer. You know, something a little bit, you know, from Earth. And, you know, the either medicinal marijuana or, like I said, the psilocybin mushrooms that's been used to treat PTSD. So I just feel like there needs to be a little bit more of a balance with that in our Star Trek, where it's showing people maybe using something. Like, I think Phlox would probably have a remedy that would be herbal of some kind that might be a drug to treat somebody's depression. Like, I feel like they could have done that, you know, because he seemed to be really into, like, homeopathic medicine. I don't know.
Well, you also know that Beverly Crusher has that background from her grandmother.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah, Beverly, too. And we have Dr. Mbega seems to as well. He put that, what was it, sea urchin paste on the foreheads a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe we'll get it. I don't know. But I'm done my drug tirade. I was also raised by hippies in the middle of the woods. So if that paints my background at all.
That explains so much, Mark. All right.
Raised by wolves. Okay. shoot. Okay, let's jump into trivia All right. Now that we've alienated. They've already tuned out. We've alienated so much of our listeners.
Nice. All right, so let's see trivia here. Okay. As each of us harvested for Borg parts, the operator wonders where his cortical node is, which was previously removed in the episode Imperfection on Star Trek Voyager. Ironically, Seven bursts into the room moments later with his node implanted in her.
Yeah.
It's a good little callback.
Yeah. Did you remember that as watching?
Yeah, I remember watching. I do enjoy that episode of Voyager.
This episode confirms that Icheb managed to survive without his implant, despite the medical concerns of the doctor. So, yeah, I know that that was towards, I guess, the end of Voyager's run. And I remember the doctor mentioning that when the procedure was done. He's like, I don't know how long you can last without it, but we'll see. So, yeah, confirms that he did live somewhat of a longer life past that.
Yes, he did.
It's another.
Yeah, I think the idea 15, of
20 years
of ex-Borg is different, and it was frontier medicine for some of the doctors in 80s and 90s Trek. I mean, when Locutus gets deborged by Beverly, that's the first time it's ever attempted and done, and then we only done a few more times until we see Picard the whole ex-Borg process. So, XB. Under Seven's guidance, Icheb seemingly continued his Starfleet Academy training that he started on Voyager, seen in such episodes as Imperfection, Human Error, and Q2 after arriving on Earth in 2378. This is the perfect little trivia to tie in another little tidbit that I hope will get explained a little better. So we learned in Season 2 of Picard that Seven of Nine was not allowed to join Starfleet because of her ex-Borg status. And she was not trusted, and Janeway almost quit over it, it's even said. But Icheb is ex-Borg, and he is in Starfleet. We've established that there are ex-Borg in Starfleet. So I wonder what the difference is there. I mean, Icheb only being a kid and being separated early, is that a factor? You know, Seven being as connected as she was and some of the things that she did while she was on Voyager? I don't know. It seems like, at first glance, it seems like a plot hole, but maybe there's more to it.
Yeah, maybe it will get explained in a future series, and that'd be great. Yeah. A Captain Harry Kim series, maybe. Heck, I'd watch that.
By yourself.
No.
I'm not a Harry Kim
poor
fan.
Poor Harry Kim.
Let the letters start now.
I had such a crush on him when I was a kid. I was like,
"Did you?
He's so dreamy, Harry Kim." Mm-hmm. Anyway, so as we mentioned previously, Quark's bar was shown, as well as Mott's hair emporium, ironically, Dabo tables, and Orion slave girls are present on Free Cloud. So. Again, the little Easter eggs, if you know, and if you don't know, then they don't take away from the episode. I get that.
Exactly.
But it would have been nice to go in Quark's.
Well, one of my favorite little Easter eggs was, as part of the fabricated facer references, Rios was said to have worked for Mr. Quark of Ferenginar, a job involving the Breen. So there's actually the Quark, there's the Ferenginar, and there's the Breen, all mentioned in just like one sentence.
Yeah. So many great callbacks there. Yeah. And the Breen, now there's another species that is only briefly seen on screen, a couple of episodes ever, and you never see what they look like. And I think it's, you know, for future Trek, one of those species that they should, you know, dive into more, that they could pull the thread at, like what they're doing on Strange New Worlds with the Gorn. So... you know, I don't know. That's an idea I'm throwing out there for all of our Paramount, you know, executives that are listening to this particular podcast that hasn't been tuned out already because of my drug references.
A very special warning on this week's episode.
Right. So the Red Bolian is oddly named, as all previously seen Bolians have been various shades of blue. But I love that because... you know, if you go to planet Earth, you're going to find humans of all colors and sizes and shapes and whatnot. And I feel like most species, even what they're doing with the Romulans now, is just showing there are varying different types of Romulans. Why wouldn't there be different types of Bolians? Maybe there are less of them, or maybe the red ones tend to stay on planet more often. I don't know. But at least they're all bald.
True. In the Guinan corn in here, the Tranya beverage that Bajazel offers Maddox used to be a favorite drink of Balak, throwback to TOS's The Carbonite Maneuver. It could also be found in DS9, Facets, the drink that Rios orders, the Tembiti Lagoon Cocktail, appears to be named after a body of water on Risa. So, which kind of makes sense, you know, tropical drink and, you know, umbrellas and everything, very Risean thing too, that you would have.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't get, obviously, the lagoon reference, but I love that that's in there. Again, it's just showing more. People like to complain about the writers of the new Trek, but it shows that they really do put a lot of effort into research and trying to connect all of these shows in whatever ways they can, for a little bit of continuity there, and I love that. Especially love like the Tranya beverage, because the Corbinite Maneuver is, you know, a TOS episode I've gone back to I don't know how many dozen times. It was one of Leonard Nimoy's favorites. It's one of my favorites. And obviously it has Ron Howard's brother in it. I forget how old he was at the time of this filming, but Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother, he's not only in TOS, but he shows up, I think, again in like DS9. He's also been in Discovery. He's been on quite a number of Star Treks. Was he on Voyager? I don't know. I think he's been in most iterations of Trek except for TNG.
I think it became like a thing that they kept on trying to put him in somewhere so that it can continue some sort of tradition.
And I love seeing him. He's always got these great characters. When he was on Kronos in Discovery as that Orion shady character trying to steal the bomb, whatever, just see what's in the briefcase, and he drugged Tilly. That was so funny. That was a cute scene that he had there, and a very memorable character. Clint Howard's good at the memorable characters, that's for sure.
All right, so Mark, what are your final thoughts on today's discussion on Stardust City Rag?
It was a very fun episode to rewatch. I do agree with Amy, it is more difficult with modern Trek to sort of pop in and out of, but this one I feel like we could do with not much effort involved, popping into this episode and out of. I feel like this is one that could stand as an episode, and there's so many great things. Like you had brought up the music with the Voyager theme getting tied in. We have so many cool references to and Easter eggs to past iterations of Trek. We have the fun costumes. Picard's ridiculous French accent that I can only take as them trying to have fun and be comical.
It's every planet.
She was young when they took her and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. there was just a lot to enjoy. And if you're a horror fan, you might enjoy the opening, but Christos and I, maybe not so much. We'll just kind of fast forward through the opening. But if you're into horror, you might enjoy the opening. I don't know, that's my thoughts. What are your thoughts, Christos?
Well, I think it's an enjoyable episode overall. Maybe if I had to give it a rating, I'd probably give it a 7.5 or 8 in that out of 10 kind of area there. It's not the best. It's got some issues, but it's very enjoyable episode just to watch beginning to end, kind of capery, the deception elements of it. Yes, I can live without the first couple of minutes. I see why they're there, though. I don't get hung up too much on the plot holes. Like I said, but the biggest one I could find so much was like the costuming. And that's not just this particular episode of Picard, but a continuing theme through season one. I think it's a little better in season two because most of it's set in modern time. But it's that's probably my only major nitpick. Fun episode. Love to see, it's great, really, as Seven of Nine's reintroduction into the Star Trek universe, given her very brief appearance at the end of episode 4. So, love it. Next week's episode is our Time Traveler series, part 3, where we'll be revisiting DS9's Trials and Tribulations. which if you want to go back and rewatch that before next week, listeners, it's season 5, episode 6.
So excited for this one. Deep Space Nine gets a reputation of being the first of the dark treks, but here they go and have some lighthearted fun in one of the better TOS episodes. Everybody remembers the Tribbles. When you think of Star Trek, you think of Tribbles. Mm-hmm. And here Deep Space Nine dives into that a little more. It's great to see the Deep Space Nine characters interacting with the legacy original series characters, and you know, they partially like rebuilt sets and stuff to film in, and it was just I feel like a love letter to the fans.
Yeah,
and I'm really looking forward to it too.
Yeah, the episode was originally done to celebrate Star Trek's 30th anniversary. It was in 96, and that was when the 30th anniversary was going on. So that was what they did on DS9. And I believe Voyager did the episode with Sulu where they go back to the events of Undiscovered Country. So there were kind of two things going on to celebrate the anniversary that year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I love what they did with Sulu on Voyager 2.
That was really nice to see. I love that episode. Because I love Undiscovered Country. So it's like meanwhile on Undiscovered Country. We should talk about that one sometime.
Yeah. Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode. I am sure you guys have some thoughts, so please let us know. And we hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue the discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at AllGoodPod. We would love for you to reach out. We love the interaction. So please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. So Christos, where can people find you when you are not writing letters to the execs at Paramount Plus to get Beverly her own show?
Well, that takes up most of my time, Mark. But you can find me at GreekGeekSD on Twitter and Instagram. That's GreekGeekSD. And you can find me in the BQN Collective as well. And so, Mark, where can people find you when you're not hanging out with Rafi smoking out on Free Cloud?
I would be.
I kind of would be too, totally. Actually.
Yes, one of us. All right. Well, when I am not doing that, without overindulging, you guys can find me on the BQN Collective page on Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And if you guys become patrons of the network on Patreon, you can listen to me on my show, It's Green, where I have yet to once mention drugs, by the way. So there's that. Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find the show.
For the listeners, as a disclaimer, I live in California where marijuana is perfectly legal.
Massachusetts too.
There you go. It's spreading throughout the world. At this time, we would like to thank our executive producers who make this all possible. They are Mr. Mark White, Ms. Amy Nelson, Tony Robertson, and Ken Tripp. We'd also like to thank our executive producers Mahedra Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. A special thanks to Tony Robertson for our artwork and Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Join the Hive to enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moment, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Please visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things. Great joy and gratitude every damn day of my life.
Mic drop.
Previously on BQN, All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast.
I think that's kind of the flaw of his genetic manipulation, is I have to defeat my enemy. And in his mind, just like Moby Dick, the enemy is Captain Kirk, you know? And so he kind of blows his chance. In fact, in some ways, that maybe saves the galaxy, because if Khan had just kind of taken off and I got Reliant, I got Genesis, I'm out of here. Who knows what he could have gone and done?
Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast.
I think for cosplay, for me, a good way to put it is low effort, maximum impact. And you want to get that balance, yeah? You don't want to put in thousands of hours of effort for it to look all right. So I put in little bits of effort and usually get a good result out of it.
Mickey's Marvels, a Disney podcast.
You know, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers otherwise feels like something that they would just reboot into a modern day cartoon, like they've done with DuckTales. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did with like Darkwing Duck or Tailspin or any of those.
You will find these and more of your favorite podcasts on BQN.